So thankful to be able to be with you all. Thank you for the opportunity. We're going to do another Old Testament lesson. I love taking some principled lessons from the Old Testament and seeing the life that is still in those stories today. And it's another familiar one. So if you want to turn to Exodus chapter 3. As Matt said, we're in the middle of nowhere. We have a Walmart and McDonald's, and we got an Arby's within the past few years, so we are in high cotton down there. But this is leading into the wilderness wanderings for Moses and the Israelites, but it takes a little doing on the front end, if you remember. And you go to Exodus chapter 3, verses 1 through 10, and we see that God reveals his plan. Verse 1, now Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian, and he led his flock to the west side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. He looked, and behold, the bush was burning, yet it was not consumed. And Moses said, I will turn aside to see this great sight, why the bush is not burned. When the Lord saw that he had turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, Moses, Moses. And he said, here I am. Then he said, do not come near. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground. And he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. Then the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt, and have heard their cry because of their taskmasters. I know their sufferings, and I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of that land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. And now, behold, the cry of the people of Israel has come to me, and I have also seen the oppression with which the Egyptians oppress them. Come, I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. And so you have this incredible scene. Moses straight away knows it's incredible. So he's turning aside to see this great sight, but then he realizes he's fearful of looking upon God. He was afraid to look at God, verse 6. And yet God has a message for him. He reveals his plan for him. And God gives him this message that should instill some sort of confidence. Here you have this bush that is not being consumed. And he says, come, I will send you to Pharaoh that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. And so Moses says, okay, sure, sounds great. Well, let's do that. Of course not. Right? And I don't know how you would respond either, or myself. But his response is one that you could argue is one of humility, maybe overly self-deprecating, but nonetheless, he says, I'm a nobody. And in verses 11 and 12, Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt? He said, but I will be with you. Let's change that I. But God. Right? God's giving the answer to the question that Joseph came to that conclusion of himself throughout the story of his life, but God. And now God is giving that answer to Moses to the questions of his life of who am I to be able to do this and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt? He knew what he was dealing with the Egyptians. You know where Moses came from, right? An Israelite taken from that basket out of the river and raised as an Egyptian himself. So he knows the both worlds, weaned by his mother and I'm sure educated in the ways of an Israelite as well, but knowing how powerful Egypt was. But God would be with him. But he says, I'm a nobody. Can you blame him for thinking this way? What did he just witness? Maybe it's the fear of understanding, well, I can't do what you just did, but God is going to be with him. And sometimes we're humbled to a point in our own lives of feeling not only inferior, but incapable. Maybe there are certain things in our lives where it's just like, I mean, I can't do what I think it needs to be done. That's not going to be me. I don't think I can pull that off. And sometimes we're humbled to that point and to where it's, we're paralyzed with fear. In Jeremiah chapter 1 and verses 4 through 6, if you want to turn there, keep a place there in Exodus, but in Jeremiah chapter 1, and just for operation throughout the week, watch, I'll have a slide where I don't do it, but my secret code for knowing a place for you to go to turn that I won't have it displayed on the screen, if it's underlined, you turn there and we can save some time that way, okay? Jeremiah chapter 1, verses 4 through 6. Now the word of the Lord came to me saying, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you, and before you were born, I consecrated you. I appointed you a prophet to the nations. Then I said, ah, Lord God, behold, I do not know how to speak, for I am only a youth. Right? Jeremiah had an excuse as well, but God provides encouragement. You go back to verse 12 of Exodus 3, I will be with you. And then you pick up in Jeremiah 1 verse 7, but the Lord said to me, do not say I am only a youth, for to all to whom I send you, you shall go, and whatever I command you, you shall speak. Do not be afraid of them, for I am with you to deliver you, declares the Lord. Then the Lord put out his hand and touched my mouth, and the Lord said to me, behold, I have put my words in your mouth. See, I have set you this day over nations and over kingdoms to pluck up and to break down, to destroy and to overthrow, to build and plant. And so Jeremiah had his reservations just as Moses did. Moses kind of takes the long way. But we also see in Romans chapter 8 the confidence that Paul strives to instill in the brethren there in Rome and in us as well today. Knowing all these things, we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. For I am sure that neither death nor life nor angels nor rulers nor things present nor things to come nor powers nor height nor depth nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God in Christ Jesus our Lord. But it's sure hard to live that way, isn't it? To remember those passages in those times of uncertainty, those times of lacking in confidence in ourselves, and it's more so a lack of confidence in God, a lack of trust in God, even though he is providing the encouragement as he did to Jeremiah, as he did to Moses, and certainly as he does for us today. And so sometimes that doesn't seem enough for us, as it certainly wasn't for Moses. And so in our time this morning, I want to talk about excusing ourselves from God. These excuses that I'm sure have been taught time and time again, I'm sure you've heard them. I think it's still just a good reminder for us. And maybe, again, like we said, a case study between Joseph and his brothers. You could really also make a case study for the start of Moses' ministry, if you will, his leadership of the people of Israel out of Egypt, and compare that to the leadership of Joseph in Egypt, who's saying, this is going to happen. You are going to take my bones from here. This is happening. And here you have the pre-selected leader of the Israelites telling God, not me. You need to look somewhere else, because I don't think I can do it. And so you pick up in the text in chapter 3 and verse 13 through 22, and we have the excuse or response of what if. Well, that's a common one, isn't it? You ever play the what if game? What if this happens? What if that happens? What if this, that, I know, one in a million chance, but you never know. What if that happens? And so let's see what Moses says here in verse 13. Then Moses said to God, if I come to the people of Israel and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they ask me, what is his name? What shall I say to them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. And he said, say this to the people of Israel, I am has sent me to you. God also said to Moses, say this to the people of Israel, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my name forever, and thus I am to be remembered throughout all generations. Go and gather the elders of Israel together and say to them, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham and Isaac and of Jacob has appeared to me, saying, I have observed you and what has been done to you in Egypt, and I promise that I will bring you up out of the affliction of Egypt to the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, a land flowing with milk and honey. And they will listen to your voice, and you and the elders of Israel shall go to the king of Egypt and say to him, the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, has met with us And now, please let us go a 3 days' journey into the wilderness that we may sacrifice to the Lord our God. But I know that the king of Egypt will not let you go unless compelled by a mighty hand. So I will stretch out my hand and strike Egypt with all the wonders that I will do in it. After that, he will let you go. And I will give this people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. And when you go, you shall not go empty. But each woman shall ask of her neighbor and of any woman who lives in her house for silver and gold jewelry and for clothing. You shall put them on your sons and on your daughters, so you shall plunder the Egyptians." You know, you might argue this isn't really an excuse, but and maybe not a hardline excuse, but he offers a what if. And God answers a whole lot more what ifs that Moses could have gone down the line of questioning. And he's answering all these things on the front end here. No, he doesn't tell them that there's going to be 10 plagues, but he does say, Pharaoh's going to resist, but you're still going to get out of there. You're still going to lead the people out. But likewise for us, do we tend to play the what if game? In Matthew chapter 28, verses 16 and 17, "Now the 11 disciples went to Galilee, to the mountain to which Jesus had directed them, and when they saw him, they worshipped him, but some doubted." Right? Jesus told them to be where they needed to be, but still yet, even as they are before Jesus, they doubt. And don't we do the same, this paralysis by analysis? You know, we're told that faith will become sight, but a lot of times we have the inclination or the desire that, well, I really want to see it. That doubting Thomas kind of faith that really is no faith at all. And so we paralyze ourselves through the analyzation process, and we get paralyzed by the what if and don't focus on what is, right? What has got me this far? What is Moses doing right this instant in this text? He's communicating with God. He's talking to this burning bush that is not being consumed. It's not an ash heap at this point. It's still the form of a bush. And he's communicating with God, and God's telling him this great plan that he has to deliver his people out of bondage. Says that he's heard their cries and that he's going to deliver them, and is telling him really step by step how this is going to go down. And yet Moses will still have questions. He will still have excuses. You know, our faith is drastically affected by what we focus on and what we don't. When we focus on the what ifs, it takes our minds off the what is. You know, Matthew 26 and verses 30 through 32, when they had sung a hymn on the front side of the cross, before Jesus goes to the cross, they went out to the Mount of Olives. Then Jesus said to them, "You will all fall away because of me this night, for it is written, I will strike the shepherd and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. But after I am raised up, I will go before you to Galilee." And then you pick up in chapter 28, verse 10. "Then Jesus said to them, do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee." But again, then you go to verses 16 and 17. They are doubting. Why are they doubting? Paralysis by analysis. They are in the presence of Jesus. Just as Moses was in the presence of God, and God saying, this is going to happen. Jesus is telling them on the front end, this is going to happen. And now he's there, and some are still there doubting. But maybe we are there, even this morning, in the presence of God, where two or three are gathered in my name, there I am with you. That we have God in our midst, and yet maybe there are things in our lives that we're not looking at the what is of God's presence and the what is of his promises and the what is of what his provisions have already been to lead us to this point. But the only thing we can think about is what if? What if this happens? What if things don't work out just exactly the way I think they need to work out? What if someone says this? What if someone doesn't do that? Or whatever the case might be. But God provides an answer. This is kind of that mic drop, right? I am who I am. Right? He is Yahweh. He is God who literally is with him. In this moment, as we are told, God with us in Jesus, in the name of Jesus, Emmanuel, God provides an answer for Moses on this day. I am who I am. And he is a God who is a God of history, telling him that I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I have observed you and what has been done to you in Egypt. In other words, God says, I know. I know all about what you're going through. I know what our people have been through, what my people have been through. And so at this point, surely, right, God has the answers for even the questions that Moses hasn't gotten around to asking yet. Surely Moses will put up and shut up at this point and just go with the program here. But he doesn't do that either. How easily do we forget the power of God? Well, Moses, standing in the presence of the power of God, he says, they're not going to listen. Right, chapter 4, verses 1 through 9, then Moses answered, but behold, they will not believe me or listen to my voice, for they will say, the Lord did not appear to you. The Lord said to him, what is that in your hand? He said, a staff. And he said, throw it on the ground. So he threw it on the ground, and it became a serpent, and Moses ran from it. But the Lord said to Moses, put out your hand and catch it by the tail. So he put out his hand and caught it, and it became a staff in his hand, that they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and God of Jacob, has appeared to you. Again, the Lord said to him, put your hand inside your cloak. And he put his hand inside his cloak, and when he took it out, behold, his hand was leprous like snow. Then God said, put your hand back inside your cloak. So he put his hand back inside his cloak, and when he took it out, behold, it was restored like the rest of his flesh. If they will not believe you, God said, or listen to the first sign, they may believe the latter sign. If they will not believe even these two signs, or listen to your voice, you shall take some water from the Nile and pour it on the dry ground, and the water that you shall take from the Nile will become blood on the dry ground. And so, after all the detailed explanation from God, this is Moses' response. And again, and I have a brother or two in our congregation at Beaver Dam that will remind me, because sometimes I get a little carried away and I'm like, how can the apostles be so dumb being with Jesus and say these things, or how could Peter say this? And you could do the same thing with Moses, and then it's kind of like, oh yeah, I've done that too. I've done that a lot. And so it's not a time to be an armchair analyst and ask the question, how could Moses do something like this? Well, maybe it's okay to ask that question, but make sure you're looking in the mirror while you ask it. How can I do this? When God has said he'll be with me, when God has laid out the groundwork, this is the way it's going to work. But I'm going to establish a kingdom, and I'm going to provide you a king, and you are going to be a holy nation, a royal priesthood. That's what you are by the time Peter gets around to saying it and shows that the groundwork has been laid. It has been established. Jesus has come. He is the king. And now you have this kingdom, and I've made this provision for you to walk with me and to serve me in this life so that you can be with me eternally. But even with those provisions, sometimes we might have some of the same questions and the same excuses. He's already shown his doubt in God, and now he's showing doubt in God and the people. We won't get very far as a congregation of God's people or God's kingdom in general if that's our overarching attitude about God and his people. And Christians can be pretty negative about Christians. Christians can be pretty negative about leadership. Christians can be pretty negative, indirectly at the very least, about God. And so now Moses is doing just that. It's not just God, it's the people. Right? They're not going to listen to me. And maybe he's tapping the brakes on just putting it all on God and putting it more on the people, but how easy is it to see the worst in others and not give a chance, let alone a second one? It is so easy to see all the problems and not see the potential. And so in Colossians chapter 3, verses 12 and 13, put on then as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience, bearing with one another, and if one has a complaint against another, forgiving each other as the Lord has forgiven you, so you also must forgive. There's another one of those mic drops, right? I am who I am, God says to Moses. But as Paul says here to the brethren in Colossae, as the Lord has forgiven you, so you also must forgive. Let alone the way that we deal with struggles, the way we deal with doubts and all these things and dealing with other people, there's the recipe right there as he reminds them, put on then, this is a choice, but you need to do this, and it's a command all in the same breath. Put on then as who? As God's chosen ones. Right? You're his people now in the church. As chosen ones, holy, set apart, and beloved, God has a love for you to make these provisions. Here's the way you need to treat each other. Here's the way you need to look at each other. Be compassionate. Have kindness and humility amongst you. Be meek with each other. Be patient with each other. Bear with one another. It's a whole lot wrapped up in bearing with one another. Well, to what extent, right? Jesus had something to say about that too. When it was 70 times 7? And forgiving each other. As the Lord has forgiven you, so you also must forgive. And so God then provides signs, as we saw there in verses 2 through 8. What is in your hand? Not that God didn't know, but all right, let's have an object lesson here. Let me show you what I can do. I told you there's going to be a way that I'm going to get Pharaoh to let you all go, but let's just have a little lab experiment here. What do you have in your hand? Throw it on the ground. And so the staff becomes a serpent, becomes a staff again. Oh, and if that's not enough, all right, let's take the hand that was holding that staff, or let's take one of those hands there and show that it's clean. Now it's leprous, now it's clean again. I can do those things. How about you? And then there was the contingency plan of the water and the blood on the dry ground and so forth. If they will not believe even these two signs or listen to your voice, you shall take some water from the Nile and pour it on the dry ground, and the water that you shall take from the Nile will become blood on the dry ground. God has an answer for all of Moses' doubts and all of his excuses and all of his questions. So surely now, I mean, he's seen it with his own hands. He's seen it on his own hand. But yet, I'm not skilled enough. How many Christians today are holding back their full potential because of this one excuse? I'm not skilled enough. I don't know how to do that. I've never tried that before. And to be fair, we know what some of our skills are and aren't. There are brethren at Beaver Dam, as I'm sure here, that they're not going to be the song leader, and for very good reason, right? That happens, right? There are some who are not going to be preaching or maybe teaching a Bible class, but maybe they are the best servant that you have ever seen. Maybe they are the best quiet worker in the kingdom in checking on people and doing those things. But maybe they don't even know that they can do that because they've not even pushed themselves to that point. Not that that's any lesser than one publicly serving in a worship setting. I would say there's so much more power in that, in the day-to-day that we have with one another and in dwelling with one another. But sometimes we just come to this assumption. We assume we can't do it or we can't improve. In 1 Timothy 4:12, Paul preempts Timothy. He says, "Let no one despise you for your youth, but set the believers an example in speech, in conduct, in love, in faith, in purity." Sometimes that is a fallback. Well, I'm not old enough. I'm inexperienced. And that might be the case that you're inexperienced, but it may not be a valid excuse to say that I'm not old enough. It's just that maybe you're finally at the point where you really need to start thinking about these things. It's a lesson for our younger people to look at a guy like Timothy and Paul mentoring him and pushing him along. Don't let someone despise you for youth. But conversely, on the other side, we might get to retirement in our secular work, and sometimes that unfortunately converts over to retirement as a Christian. I'm going to scale things back in what I do in the Lord's kingdom as well. God forbid that be the case, but it happens. But what about you? In Ephesians 6, verses 10 and 11, "Finally, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil." There's God has more answers for us here. How can I stand against the schemes of the devil? If you wear the armor, if you put it on, if you're strong in the Lord and in the strength of His might, not in what your own self-perceived strength is, but what He says is true strength, what He says is true grit to have in service and to defend against Satan. And again, sometimes we forget who's on our side and why we need to try. Moses was continually forgetting, or at least not driving himself to the point that God was trying to get him to see, I am with you, I am with you, I am with you, I will provide for you. And so it begs the question for us, are we limiting ourselves and missing our potential to work and serve in more ways? We could offer, the point of all this is that these excuses that Moses offers, God has heard these excuses over and over again throughout history. This is not new. This is the human playbook in response to God and His commands. This is how we respond a lot of times, and we need to take a long, hard look in the mirror ourselves if we are using some of these same tactics. God has had a response for Moses around every turn. And so, He says in verse 10, I'm not skilled enough. But Moses said to the Lord, Oh, my Lord, I am not eloquent, either in the past or since you have spoken to your servant. But I am slow of speech and of tongue. I don't know that I have noticed this before. This is the power of reading the same text over and over again. But Moses is kind of offering an excuse within an excuse here. And not only he says, I'm not eloquent either in the past or since you have spoken to me. And so it's almost like, God, I see that you've got an answer for these things. You say you're going to be with me, and you say you're going to do this. And yeah, I saw the whole staff to serpent, serpent to staff, and the leper's hand and all that stuff. But what you haven't done so far is I'm still not a good speaker. Right? Again, we could say, man, the audacity of him to say that. But that's how much he does not want to do this job. And that might be just how much we don't want to do certain things that really need to get done. He says, I am not eloquent either in the past or since you have spoken to your servant, but I am slow of speech and of tongue. Then the Lord said to him, Who has made man's mouth? Who makes him mute or deaf or seeing or blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now therefore go, and I will be with your mouth and teach you what you shall speak. But maybe Moses, part of that eloquency, maybe he thinks, I mean, I can't speak off the cuff. I don't know a lot of big words. And sometimes we get that in our crawl or our mindset of thinking, well, I can't give a talk or I can't talk to somebody about Jesus because I don't know how to say that, even spell the word propitiation, right? I'm not eloquent. I can't talk about Jesus to somebody. God says, who has made man's mouth, right? I can't even get words out sometimes either. But did God give a requirement that we're not reading here to Moses that you've got to be able to speak so many words a second, or you need to know this many multisyllabic words in order to be a real good leader and speaker for Israel? But Moses' excuse was, I am slow of speech and of tongue, and that he's not eloquent. And so God provides perspective for him here. Who has made man's mouth? Let alone, who has made a stick into a serpent? Who has made your hand leprous and made it clean again? Who can make the water into blood? God can. And so he says, go and know. Now therefore go, and I will be with your mouth. Moses needs to know that, right? I've got an answer for everything. I'm going to provide all of these signs, let alone I'm going to even give you the words and what you need to say to the people of Israel. Just go. Right? Kind of sounds similar to that Great Commission we read of in Matthew 28. Go, therefore. Right? May we spend so much time spinning our wheels. How do we evangelize? How do we reach the lost? How do we do this? And we need to have this plan and this plan, this contingency. And what if this happens and what if that? And then we never get out the doors and go, therefore. But God's answer to Moses, go. I'll be with you. I'll be with your mouth. And it's not to say that we're going to have the words given to us osmosis. Yes, we need to study. We need to know God's word. But at some point, we need to just go and share what we know. God's not looking for a congregation full of biblical Greek scholars that can just break down the text in the original language, but people that know the message of Jesus, know what the plan of salvation is, and know how to communicate that with others in a relatable way. So many opportunities in our own personal circles that we are in, and so we see that Moses needed pushed out the door, and sometimes we do as well. And so then you have what I would call the atomic bomb excuse. Someone else can do it. Right? Not my job. And isn't this really kind of Moses' heart this whole time? I mean, this is really the underlying thing. He doesn't want to do it, and so he assumes someone else can do it, or just God can do it himself, and he doesn't need anybody else. Well, yeah, that's true, but what does God continually want to show man? I can do great things through you. I can accomplish my will through you. I can show you who I am through you. And so he says, someone else can do it. Verse 13, but he said, oh my Lord, please send someone else. It is here with this nuclear excuse option that here we finally see the anger of the Lord. Then the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses, and he said, is there not Aaron, your brother, the Levite? I know that he can speak well. Behold, he is coming out to meet you. And when he sees you, he will be glad in his heart. You shall speak to him and put the words in his mouth, and I will be with your mouth and with his mouth, and will teach you both what to do. He shall speak for you to the people, and he shall be your mouth, and you shall be as God to him. And take in your hand this staff with which you shall do the signs. Perhaps, again, the underlying wish beneath most excuses in relation to working and serving is just that mindset. Someone else can do it. It's not about, though, whether someone else will do it. It's about whether or not you will. Will you be the one to do it? In Hebrews chapter 5, verses 11 through 14, about this we have much to say, and it is hard to explain. Since you've become dull of hearing, this is the context of talking about the order of Melchizedek, and they say, we're not even ready for that lesson yet. He'll be ready in about a chapter or two in the text. But here he says, we have much to say, and it's hard to explain since you have become dull of hearing. For though by this time you ought to be teachers, you need someone to teach you again the basic principles of the oracles of God. You need milk, not solid food, for everyone who lives on milk is unskilled in the word of righteousness since he is a child. But solid food is for the mature, for those who have their powers of discernment trained by constant practice to distinguish good from evil. Here in Hebrews, these Christians have heard and have understood what it is to become a Christian and have become Christians, have seemingly gone down the road in some way in their faith, but now they have regressed and they've become dull and they are no longer ready to hear the next step, the next phase of where they need to go in their faith, where they need to go to grow as a group of God's people. And so the Hebrew writer is telling them, you know, I'd love to continue on in this conversation. We've got to hit the brakes here. You need somebody to go over the basics with you again. And how many have we witnessed maybe in our lives or in our own where because we're not engaged with this on a regular basis, we need to go back over the basics? And how is that hampering our light in the world when we need the light blown back into us again to fan into flame. It comes down to an individual's will, and that's what it was for Moses as well. And yet we see here God provides assistance even in his anger. He provides him a buddy, his own brother. And God has provided us with a lot of brothers and sisters to where we don't have the excuse. But if it's a congregation full of excuses, then we're back at ground zero as well. But to be able to look at each other and say, we're going the same direction. We have the same objective. We have the same marching orders. Let's do this together. And God provides assistance. Aaron speaks for Moses to the people, but God still says, I'm going to put my words in your mouth and in his mouth. And you will teach. I will teach you both what to do. He shall speak for you to the people, and he shall be your mouth, and you shall be as God to him. He still wants Moses to be the authority figure, the authority presence for the people of Israel. And so Moses still speaks for God. How are we doing on time, Mike?
You have five till.
Okay, so we're...
We've got about 3 more minutes.
We're good then. Okay, so he says, take in your hand this staff with which you shall do the signs. And certainly this staff is going to be pretty iconic, right? We get back to that parting of the Red Sea and all the rest. But what we need to understand as we look at these excuses, consider these excuses of Moses, we need to understand that you are somebody to God. Each one of us can do great things in the kingdom. It's just a matter of what we define as great. Are we going to faithfully serve him? Are we going to take up his word, take his message, and apply it to our own selves so that we can then help others apply it as well? Because we need to understand that God doesn't focus on the what ifs, but what is. His word is truth. He's not asking for your opinion. He's not looking for all the what ifs and the caveats and the things and what might be under this rock that could really hamper my effectiveness and all that. What is? What is God is there in the presence of that bush. God is speaking from that bush. God is declaring, I have a plan and this is the plan, so go do the plan. And he has an answer for everything that Moses has a rebuttal to. So we can't afford to dwell in the what ifs, but what is as well. And if others don't listen, it's God they're ignoring. That is a message that carries over to the New Testament. Jesus even tells his disciples, shake the dust off your feet. Right? Move on. There might be a time to move on. For Moses, there were times where he really wanted to be able to do that. He didn't have that advice, but at the same time, to understand the perspective, if others don't listen, it's not that they're ignoring you. The real problem is they're ignoring God. And so we may have to move on. We need to take a hiatus and just go and pray for them and pray for a better opportunity going forward or whatever the case might be. But understand it's not that they're ignoring you. They're ignoring God. We need to not underestimate what we are skilled at, and we need to utilize it for his glory. There are a lot of things that we can't do, but there are certainly some things that we can. And we need to focus on those, hone those, and use them for God's glory. And so, in the ultimate, it's not whether someone else can do it or not. The question is, will you? Will you do it? Or will you, like Moses, for those 3 or 4 excuses, find every reason which way not to do what God is telling you to do? May we choose to trust God at his word, trust that he has a well thought out, well developed plan. He has the answers to the questions of life that really need answered, and that we can trust him, that he's going to lead us to the promised land ourselves. Thank you very much for your kind attention this morning.